Welcome to the Money Tree Investing Podcast. Stock market, wealth, personal finance, value stocks. Invest in your life.
Hello, Smart Money Tree Podcast listeners. Welcome to this week's show. My name's Kirk Chisholm, and I will be your host. So today we're talking with Jackie Porter. How are you doing today, Jackie?
I am doing great.
There's a lot of topics I want to talk about today because I think given the whole COVID crisis, it brings up a lot of different issues. So Jackie, why don't you tell listeners a little bit about your background before we get started?
I'm a financial planner now for 24 years. But Kirk, if you asked me, you know, if I was going to grow up to be a financial planner, I would have said no. That was not what I was thinking I was going to be doing. I thought I would be doing one of two things. My name is Porter, and I was always really interested in journalism. I was always putting a fake mic in people's faces, asking them questions. So I became Porter, the reporter in university, which was super funny. I always had an interest in people and problems. And so I was really fascinated with the area of psychology and human relations and how people relate to one another. So I had actually, when I was in university, got a psychology and communications degree because I just really wasn't sure which one I was going to do. Crazy thing about that is I settled on psychology. But as I started to do like practicums with people when I was in my last year of university and started to hear people talk about their problems, and a lot of what I learned back then had to do with unconditional positive regard and listening. And I just felt like as I went to all the different meetings I had with people who were going through their challenges, I kept hearing the same stories over and over again. And this little voice in my head kept screaming, "Do something about your problems." I just realized that I wasn't cut out for doing therapy because I wanted to coach people. I wanted to give them advice. So that probably should have been that first seed that was planted in my head that I was going to do something with people, but not necessarily where I was just listening. I was going to do something where I got a chance to coach and actually give advice. And I just stumbled actually into financial planning as a second career. I took a package. I became a really good saver over the course of my life, just being on my own since I've been on my own since I was 16. My mother passed away when I was in my early teens. I was 16 and I was on my own for a really long time, having to make a lot of really adult decisions at a really young age. And so maybe a part of me just had low tolerance at the time for hearing people's problems after, you know, kind of going through my own journey of having to become financially independent. But I credit my mom a lot with being that person who always taught me never rely on a man, have your own money. And that was what I heard my whole life. So she kind of prepared me to be financially single at a really young age, being able to make these adult decisions around money. So the second career happened when I managed to save quite a bit from my first job. And somebody, actually one of my roommates I had when I was in high school, referred me to a financial planner. She said, you know, you should talk to your financial planner because a financial planner just to find out what you can do with this money you managed to save from your first job. And actually, that was the first time I actually heard of the profession. And when I sat down, what I didn't realize at the time was this woman who was talking about financial advising. What you should know is there's not a lot of women in the financial industry, especially 24 years ago, and a woman of color, which she might as well have been a unicorn at that time. But she started talking to me about how money could work for me and if I ever thought about money working for me. And that concept really was a game changer for me. It actually changed the whole trajectory of my life. It made me, you know, want to learn everything I could because it was about 10 years of working really hard, working three jobs to get through university, you know, getting this first full-time job, leaving that first full-time job. So everything I could learn about having money work for me was crucial for me because I was tired after all of that. That led me to get my licenses, create a seven-figure net worth for myself. And at this stage in my life, I realized how important it is to give back to people who maybe never had that kind of money conversation before, and realizing what a difference it made in my life, what a difference it could make in other people's lives as well.
You obviously had a lot of life experience. And I think with a lot of people, from what I've found, is most people feel uncomfortable having these money conversations. They have uncomfortable teaching their kids in part because no one taught them, so they don't really know where to start. So let's talk a little bit about your background when you came up, and you pretty much had to kind of figure things out quickly. How did you kind of figure it out? Because most people never figure it out. What were some of the challenges you faced, and how did you kind of overcome some of those challenges?
The only money advice my mother ever gave me was work hard. Right? My mother was an immigrant, first generation immigrant, and she was the quintessential immigrant. She had three jobs. She had a full-time job. She had all these other jobs. And because, you know, child labor laws, Kirk, aren't what they are today. It meant, and, you know,
wait, there are laws for that?
no babysitting. Pretty much I was drafted to all the things that she did, and I didn't get an opportunity to say no. So that's the lesson I learned about money. And a lot of people don't learn about money in school, right? So it all depends on how savvy the people are around you. So I knew how to work hard, but I had never had anybody talk to me about money working hard. So the very first money conversation I ever had was with this advisor. And like I said, it just depends on what you get exposed to. But the challenges I faced was I just knew how to work hard. I knew how to save just because I had no plan B, right, Kirk? I had no choice. I had to make sure I kept the roof over my head. So working hard, working three jobs, going through, you know, high school and university was what I did to keep a roof over my head, because I did know how to work hard. My mother did instill those values with me. But truthfully, I had no idea that I could actually have money work hard for me as well. I was just passionate about learning all I could about the profession, never heard about the financial planning profession in school. And so I studied, got all of my licenses, got my financial planning designation. You know, I'm always taking courses about money because it's really a passion of mine. But I think for the average person who doesn't have that conversation, again, it just depends on what you're exposed to, who you're exposed to, what your family values are, what you learn about money. And so having those conversations about money are crucial in potentially dispelling myths you might have about money. I had a myth that I only could work hard for money, just for one example.
And that's really important. And I want to kind of raise that, because I think the question I would ask you is, you know, it didn't sound like you had a lot of choices at that stage because you needed to. Like you said, you worked hard because you had no choice but to work hard. And I wonder if, I mean, we in culture now, we've got an abundance of choice. Like I remember growing up and it was like, you had like one toilet plunger in the whole house, and if it broke, you wrapped it up with tape and you kept using it, right? Now we've got like 10 in each house, and oh, it chipped its paint. Let's throw it out and get another one. Like, so I wonder, does choice, you know, does the abundance of choice come into this when it comes to kind of like money problems?
I do. I think probably we're living in a scenario now where there's a lot of choice and there's a ton of information. There's information that might be useful, and there's a lot of information that's not useful, right? People get overwhelmed. I know when I work with female clients, the sense of overwhelm, the sense of abundance of choice could lead you to make no decision around finance because you don't want to make the wrong one when there's so many choices to make. One of the things that we have to do if we're going to get better around leaning into money conversations is deciding that we're going to become lifelong learners on the subject, whatever it is. And you can decide each year, this is something I want to learn a little bit more about. So where's my weaknesses? Where's my strengths? And what do I want to bone up on? Those are some questions I'd love for your listeners to ask themselves and decide, you know, what they want to learn, and also where they probably need to get help. Maybe it's not going to be enough to go online and go on Google and search, right? And seek out the information or read books. Where are some areas I might want to actually sit down with someone and gain more knowledge?
Yeah, I think that's great advice. I think everyone should be lifelong learners. I think, you know, just from talking to you before, I mean, you and I are in the profession, and it's a profession that always changes. That's actually what I love about the profession, is every day is different. You know, for you to come to work and say, hey, the market's going to do the same thing it did yesterday, that's not going to happen.
I 100% agree with you. And like you, Kirk, because the things are always changing in the financial industry with taxes, you know, different events, financial events, how do they affect the markets? How do they affect your financial situation? Now we're dealing with a pandemic. That's a whole other conversation around money. I'm constantly learning, taking courses, writing about money, speaking about money, because I always also have to continue to improve my knowledge. And so here we are in an industry that's always changing. For consumers, they have to also take that responsibility to say, I want to learn X. because I think that is going to improve my financial situation. So if this is the year you decide I'm in debt, I want to figure out how to get out of debt, it's either a decision I'm going to take myself and do the work myself, or I'm going to get somebody involved. Those are some of the conversations you need to have with yourself.
You mentioned something I wanted to kind of dig into with the COVID crisis. There's this topic of financial resilience that I talk about a lot, and it sounds like you do as well. Let's kind of talk about, what does financial resilience mean to you?
Yeah, financial resilience is really being more prepared, anticipating uncertainty and being prepared for it, because you just never know when situations might change. And I think a really great example of being financially resilient is having an emergency fund, right? So right now you're working, now we're in a pandemic, people are losing their jobs. So an emergency fund just means you have cash that you've been saving, you've been putting aside for years, and you can now access that money when you don't have a job, but you're still going to need money to pay your bills. And maybe you're only on, you know, EI, or you're on some kind of unemployment program where you're not getting as much income. So you've got that cash to help you pay the bills for a period of time. And so that's one way to be more financially resilient. Another way to be more financially resilient is around health. Do you have insurances in place, like health insurance, disability, like income replacement, so that if all of a sudden you became sick, you've got plans, access to what I call other people's money, in this case, the insurance companies, to help you pay those expenses that can really add up if you're ill. The third way that you can be resilient is around planning. If you're in a relationship, just planning on how you can make sure that financially your money survives if the relationship doesn't. So how you do that is you have those really crucial conversations around money with your partner. Like if you're getting into a new relationship, and I have these conversations with women all the time, do you have a cohabitation agreement so that both of you get to keep the money you come into the relationship with, right? Do you have a prenup, or where you're saying, here's, if the relationship doesn't work out, here are some of the parameters on what it will look like if we break up from a financial perspective. Do you have a postnup? So having these conversations around protecting your finances when you're in a relationship. And by the way, all of these things are happening during a pandemic. And being resilient means you anticipate things happening ahead of time and having a plan for that.
It's a good conversation to have when you're talking about it. You had mentioned like a postnup or even prenup, but that to me just sounds like a problem waiting to happen. So how do you address that with people? You know, I think it's an important conversation. It's like putting together a will that no one ever wants to do, but totally. Yet broaching it kind of is like saying, yeah, just in case this doesn't work out, let's talk about how we're going to break up. There's nothing romantic about that. So how can people talk about that?
You kind of have to be prepared to be vulnerable first. So you can't start the conversation by saying, and so what's your credit score, Kirk? You know what I mean? And you want to do it in a way that's actually saying you have faith in the relationship. So I recommend that people early on, because you don't want to wait until you're, you know, waiting till the person puts a ring on it, right? Where they're like, will you marry me? You're like, okay, but before we do this, let's have this conversation around money. You want to start early on in the relationship, and you want to be the person starting that conversation. So I kind of term that getting financially naked with your partner earlier than later in the relationship, right? And what that looks like is being the first person to get financially naked. I'm really glad that, you know, things are going so well in our relationship, and we're thinking about the future. Here's some of the things I'm thinking. I have this much debt. I have this much saved. You know, these are some of the plans I have for the future. And I want to like start having these kinds of conversations with you, so where I can get a sense if we're on the same page or how we would deal with it as a couple. You know, because I believe in our relationship, I think this is something that we know that people say relationships fall apart because we don't have these conversations. And because I, you know, really believe in this relationship, I want to, you know, make sure we don't have that as a barrier. Do you know what I mean? So having those kinds of conversations and being the person, you know, having that conversation first, putting yourself out there. I actually recommend, you know, getting financially naked sometimes is harder than getting naked for real. And that's why it's important to breach that conversation early on in the relationship.
I would just like to point out, I am in full support of people being financially naked with each other as early as possible.
Yeah. And you know what?
Just saying.
Studies show, Kirk, I've just read a study earlier this year that the Financial Planners Association, FP Canada, I think they have FP US as well, Financial Planner US and Financial Planner Canada did. The report said that people were likely to break up with you if they found out you were in a lot of debt. Mm. So if they had that information ahead of time, so you bring that up date one, date two, and you're like, by the way, FYI, I have bad credit and I'm in a lot of debt. All of a sudden, the romance just goes. I don't know why. Disappears.
Well, I can imagine why. I'm sure from the female point of view, you're looking for people that are somewhat stable.
This is both men and women.
I think what's interesting, and actually this would be an interesting conversation with you because we're from different genders. I would imagine that what men and women look for in their partner financially may be a little bit different. And since you come from the background of working with single women and you know, your mom had a big influence on you, but you had a lot of this yourself. How big of an influence for you is a partner having a strong financial background? How important is that to you?
I can't talk about my partner who killed me, but I don't need the person to be wealthy. However, yeah. I do need for them to be able to take care of themselves financially. So I want to know the person's financially independent. I don't have to support them. I do want to, and I have set up a cohab agreement. And I think those conversations are important. So if you're okay, like as far as these are the conversations I encourage single women and women in general to have with their partners is if you're okay financially, that's great. You don't have to be wealthy, but I don't necessarily want to come out of this relationship financially worse off after because we got together. And I don't want you to either. So if we're both going to protect one another, let's figure out where we're at and how to look out for each other and advocate for each other and advocate for ourselves, especially because I deal with a lot of female clients. Women need to understand that we live longer, we make less, we take a lot of years off for caregiving. And so that actually is a major headwind in terms of being able to have a secure financial future. So I'm having these conversations with clients. In fact, I tend to find when clients struggle with having conversations where they're getting financially naked, I'm quarterbacking those conversations, helping to have that conversation early, breaching those conversations for both sides, let's say, for both partners, so that they can get on the same page financially, because it is difficult. So it's a question of, you know, how you want to go about it.
I'm just thinking here about how Apple is going to have a different rating for this show because you're talking about getting in the middle of two couples getting financially naked.
I know.
Let's just hope they don't take this the wrong way.
No, financially naked is financially. It's looking at the numbers and talking about your finance. But here's what I say, Kirk, having a financial conversation, because we know that people divorce a lot because of money, better to have, as I said, these conversations early and end of the relationship. When these conversations don't happen, it leads to resentments. And it's one of the reasons that people divorce, right? So I often say to people, having a conversation with a financial planner is cheaper than therapy and maybe more practical, right?
Because, I would agree. Yeah. And a good one for sure.
100%. Because going to therapy typically means someone's going to be blamed. And the person who's usually going typically is that person. So if we can talk about some of the financial headwinds, the financial issues that couples are having that are getting in the way of their relationship, and we can talk about it from a practical perspective, not from an emotional perspective, but from a practical perspective, assuming both parties are prepared to do the work. Let's get a budget. Let's pay down debt. We're on the same page and wanting to get there. And then I think couples actually have a much better chance. There's a much better chance of the relationship surviving.
It's good to get that point of view, because I think from a male perspective, and I don't speak for our whole gender, but certainly for sure. From my experience, you know, men tend to be a little more cautious of bringing it up to women for feeling that they're going to ruin the romance or they're going to, you know, just seem uncouth or whatever it is. But I think with a lot of men, they either don't want to bring it up or they feel like, you know what, I'll handle it. Even though we're, you know, equality is really important to people, I think there's still this kind of old school thing where men are still feel like we need to be the caregivers, we need to be the providers. Whether that's true or not, I think is less relevant. I think as a gender, we feel like that's a primal urge for us, like we need to provide. So I think in some ways, from a male perspective, it's challenging because we don't want to ruin the romance, but also we feel like, oh, I'll take care of it. You know, like being the typical man, like, I don't need to ask directions, but you know, so I think it's challenging. And so how can we bridge that divide in these conversations? What are some kind of tips you can give us?
I think first and foremost, you start off having the conversation when you're not upset. There's two sides to this. This is, we're getting together in a relationship. So let's start off our relationship on the right foot by having this conversation early on in the relationship. And so that's the first thing, is having the conversation earlier rather than later, making it a conversation you have on a regular basis. Because over the course of relationship, personal finance is going to change. Maybe you're the one making money in the beginning, Kirk. Maybe down the road, I'm the one making money. Kids come in. How are we going to deal with that? And who's going to take time off? And how's it going to affect our finance? There's lots of financial conversations we need to have. So getting comfortable talking about money is crucial. Getting a sense of what the values are crucial. So the how-to is have the conversation early. If you need help having those conversations, involve a professional. And, you know, consider talking to a financial professional on how you guys can get on the same page. Put a budget together, how you can, you know, show up successfully as a couple, have regular financial meetings. And most importantly, when you're doing that, don't do it when you're mad. Don't do it when you're already resentful. And you know what, early on in the relationship, but as the relationship goes on and you're putting together a, you know, a cash flow statement for a couple and a budget, people can get resentful if they don't feel like their needs are being met. So, you know, have a you, what I call a you, me, and we budget. So a you, me, and we budget is, I have things I might have to accomplish, because we're not going to retire at the same time unless we're the same age. And even if we are, we might have different goals on when we want to retire, right? So have a you, me, and we budget. So the you budget is maybe what I'm putting away for retirement, maybe some short-term goals I have. I, you know, had this one client who, he really wanted to get a motorcycle when he got, you know, he got to 55, which was 5 years away. So we had to put it in the budget or else he wasn't going to be on board. You know what I mean? And the we budget is the things that we're going to do together. Maybe it's paying off the property at a certain point in time, getting a car, getting things for the kids. But having said that, the me budget could also be in a second marriage. So there's specific things I'm going to be doing for my kids that aren't your children. You know what I mean? So those are all these really conversations that have to be had, because if they're not had and they're not addressed, that can lead to long-term resentments.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And I love the idea of a you, me, and we budget. I've come across a lot of younger people who have this romantic notion of, oh, we need to have a joint checking account. Like, we need to both be on there together and we're going to share everything. And I take the opposite approach of, you need to keep them separate, not because you're not, you know, working together, but because, I mean, you look at companies, they don't have like 10 people pulling money from a single checking account. That would cause chaos, right?
No,
unless they had a budget.
No.
So right. It's more of just from a logistical standpoint, it doesn't make sense. But I love the idea of the you, me, and we budget, because you're going through the process together, but you're keeping things separate so that you can track your own stuff. Because the last thing you want is, you know, you got $100 left in the checking account and your significant other goes out and buys a couch and there's no money there. And it's like, well, we didn't talk about the couch. And, you know, it's just stuff that happens in life, right? You've got kids and, oh, we need to go to the hospital and there's no money left. Yeah, you need to have control over it. And so personally, I prefer to keep things separate, but I think you need to plan it together, just like you said, which I think is really important.
You can have a joint account for the expenses that you both have to pay for. You know, from a practical standpoint, if you have a mortgage payment and you're both chipping in for that at the same amount, or specifically, you know, other expenses that are joint, you can have those expenses. But you definitely should have your own checking account and own investing account, because, you know, people are going to do things over the course of their lives that are just things they're doing on their own. Or with, like I said, with a scenario where people are getting married for a second, third time, potentially fourth, you know, they're going to have scenarios that need to be addressed from an individual perspective. I find when we're having these conversations, I'm having these conversations with clients, they're tricky conversations to have when you don't really even know the language to have it in. That's not going to feel like confrontational or heated.
I wanted to hit on one more topic here in the interest of time. Now, you specialize with single women or divorced women. What are some of the challenges that they face that they should, I should say women in general, should be aware of if they find themselves in that situation? Because I know probably men have similar challenges, but you know, I think obviously you're taking a very specific lens to it. So what should a single woman or divorced woman be thinking about, you know, when it comes to their money?
I would probably even narrow it a bit more. So single women of a certain age have a lot more challenges. So I find that baby boomer single women are often, I mean, women in general don't feel confident about making financial decisions. And it probably goes back to some of the things we were talking about before. Maybe there's too much information. And so there's overwhelm and then they're just not sure what decision to make. So they make no decision at all. Or it could also be the fact that they just were raised in a household where they didn't talk about money and they just don't, on the whole, feel confident about making money decisions. All that to say, we have to lean into, as single women, as women in general, we have to lean into money conversations, especially baby boomers, because baby boomers come from an era where someone else made those decisions for the most part. So their spouse may have taken care of the finances, or there was an expectation that that would happen. And if you grew up in that area, even if you're a single woman, maybe you're still waiting for someone to come around and organize all of that for you, or you're anxious about making those decisions on your own. And that's dangerous because, as I had said before, women, we live longer. We often take time out for caregiving. We also make less money. So even if we have a partner, the average age of a widow, when I was doing research for a book I wrote called Single by Choice or Chance, I found that the average age of a widow is 56. And the other thing that really shocked me was that more and more seniors, actually, they're the fastest rising group of divorcees. If you're a baby boomer and, you know, you're getting divorced at a time you thought you'd be retiring in the sun with your partner and you never expected to make decisions on your own, it leads to very negative financial consequences. It typically has led to women being more likely to be in low income benefits, low pension benefits, that put them in like a poverty scenario in retirement. So women really have to lean into looking at how they're investing, making sure they're not, their money is not just sitting around in a lazy spending checking account where it's attracting hardly any interest. We have to make money, have our money attract money and attract growth so that capital lasts as long as possible. That's something that's really crucial. We have to, if we're someone who didn't expect to make financial decisions, we have to start embracing becoming a financial lifelong learner in finance and, you know, getting a professional involved if we need to, if we don't feel comfortable making these decisions on our own. This is something that women in general, women in particular, cannot put off anymore. We have to lean into these decisions around money for ourselves sooner than later.
So Jackie, I really appreciate you coming on the show here. Any kind of final thoughts, and where can people learn more about you?
My final thoughts is I really think that one of the things I love about one of my superpowers is I love making money conversations fun. I like to use humor, provocative language, as you can see. The way that money has been discussed in the past, it doesn't need to be that way in the future. I think that's one of the ways to help people in general lean into money conversations is to make finance a lot more fun, not so technical, not so boring, because there's so much drama in finance. Shall we say, Kirk, there's a lot of drama in finance.
Every day.
Every single day. And that's my superpowers. I love making financial planning fun for people, engaging. Often I find people understand that there's a lot of drama in their own financial situation. And they just want someone who's not going to blame or shame them around their finances, but will work with them to help them understand how they can deal with their financial situation in a way that's meaningful for them. So one of the things I have on my website that I encourage your listeners to check out is What's Your Financial IQ? It's a really short quiz where you can find out where you're doing well on your, around your finances, where you're struggling. And then from there, if you want more information, you can check out our page and sign up for a half an hour complimentary assessment on what you can do to change your financial circumstances tomorrow. We'll sit with you for half an hour and give you some suggestions. So feel free to check us out. We also have lots of financial literacy videos. Again, lots of drama, lots of fun, challenges that we're doing. Yeah, feel free to check out our website. We'd love your feedback.
Hey, Money Tree Podcast listeners. Do you wish you were in early on some of the best performing IPOs of 2019 and 2020? The investors in our crowd were, and now you can join them. With our crowd, accredited investors have access to invest directly, easily, and most importantly, early. Our crowd investors have benefited from their portfolio companies IPOing, like Beyond Meat or Lemonade. Some of their other companies have been bought out by companies such as Intel, Nike, Microsoft, and Oracle. What I find interesting about our crowd is that it's not just a list of companies that you can access. Rather, it's a way you can piggyback on the due diligence of others. Now, what do we talk about all the time on this show? You have to do your own research or find someone else to do it for you. Well, this is your chance to have the experts doing the research for you. The best part is that they're eating their own cooking because they're allowing you to invest alongside them. They do all the hard work of doing diligence on the deals, and you get to show up at the end and ride alongside them. You need to be a accredited investor to participate in these deals, but it's a great way to get started. Take advantage of their expertise, their resources, and access to the pre-IPO deals. You can participate in single deals with as little as $10,000 or one of their Our Crowd funds for as little as $50,000. You can get in early in these pre-IPO companies at ourcrowd.com/wealth2021. If you go to our crowd website, the account is free to start as long as you're a accredited investor. Just go to ourcrowd.com/wealth2021. Now we're on to the panel portion of the show. That was a great interview with Jackie Porter. Really had fun with that interview. So we have our very own Megan Gorman this week. How are you doing, Megan?
I'm doing well, Kirk. How are you?
Good, good. Doing well. We also have our very own Barbara Friedberg. Hey, Barb.
Hello. How's everyone doing today?
Doing wonderful. Yeah. So let's just get started here. You know, with Jackie Porter, we talked a lot about, you know, couples with money. Barb, what was your biggest takeaway from the interview?
If you're in a relationship, you need to put money forward. You need to, like Jackie said, get naked about money. And what that means is you don't want to go too long or get too serious before you open up the door. Now, I have a quick story. My husband and I started dating in September. In October, I had gotten him into an IRA and literally taken over his finance. This may not be the best strategy for everyone else. Fortunately, we've been married for many decades, so clearly it has worked out. But, you know, thanks to me, he's very well invested.
Now, Barb, you say that, but what has been the overall return on the portfolio? Come on.
You're not going to make me divulge that, are you?
The clear takeaway here is if you really want to land a guy, just take control of his finances really early.
Exactly. Yes. And it has worked for me. And I'm sure that this advice will work for others out there as well.
Well, Barb, the funny thing is, I mean, I'm sort of in a similar boat because I took over my husband's finances pretty early on as well. But I think it brings up another issue that I run into a lot, which is you've got to have the conversations, right? And Jackie talked about that. And I know, Barb, we've talked with Kirk about that, that having these conversations is so important. And I think one of the reasons why sometimes it doesn't happen is women are often the driver of what's going on in the relationship. Like I tell my husband all the time, I'm the emotional barometer, right? And I think if women are uncomfortable talking about money, they don't want to bring it up in their relationship. You and I live in the world of money. We write about it. We talk about it all the time. So for us, it's sort of a norm. And so we made it a norm in our relationships. But I don't know if that's the case. And so, I mean, I think one of the things couples need to do, or in particular women need to do in their relationships, is not be afraid to bring it up, to not be afraid to say, this is a great way for us as a couple to grow closer. Let's talk about it. Let's talk about the things we want to do and how do we get there?
I think depending on how you were raised and kind of your money script, as it's called, and kind of what's driving you, I think for some people, it's really awkward. right? Like I know growing up, like money was not a thing you really talked about. You know, it was like money, religion, sex, health, like all these topics that people don't talk about. That one was just kind of a weird one from, you know, growing up, you know, in the Northeast as a Yankee, you know, you don't talk about money. And that's just kind of the way it was. So I think for some people with that background, it makes it very awkward to bring up, you know, especially in a relationship where I guess maybe if it's an issue, like if the person's having money problems. So my wife's single friends, that comes up in conversation because they're divorced and money is obviously an issue when you've got kids and other things involved. But bringing it up early, it's just, I don't know, for me, it's just kind of a weird topic. What are your thoughts, Barb?
In my family, money was front and central. And actually growing up, I was very annoyed with my parents because I thought they focused too much on money. Flash forward, like most of us, we've turned into our parents.
That's heresy.
Yes. But I agree that if you are in that type of background, have that type of script where money was not discussed, you need to get over it because it is an integral part of life. I don't believe it should be obviously the driving force in your life. And there are many, many, many things more important than money. But if you don't have it and you have too much debt or you don't know what to do with the money you're earning or you don't know how to save or invest, it can make your life really, really difficult. So I think resources out there, like, for example, listening to this podcast or reading books on money, finance, investing, so you elevate your financial IQ, can make a big difference, not only in your personal life, but also in the life of a couple. So you can discuss it and you can make sure you are on the same track with your partner.
Megan, one thought comes to mind because you obviously work with clients from high net worth people, and money in couples is a huge topic. So what are some things that you see in dealing with kind of the high net worth crowd when it comes to talking about money with couples?
I think I see a couple of different things that happen. First of all, what I think high net worth is very good at doing is meeting with their financial person together. And it sounds like the obvious, but makes a huge difference in making sure you both get on the same page. Because a lot of times I act more as a marriage therapist than anything else, because one spouse wants something more than the other and the other doesn't want to create waves. So it's nice to be that mediator there. The two sort of types I see a couple different standard types in working with high net worth. I see oftentimes a situation where, and I'm talking about heterosexual couples, but I see a situation where the guy is in control and he knows what he wants to do and he's just moving forward. And the wife sort of sits there and at times will say things like, I really don't know enough about money to really be involved in this discussion. Don't understand it as well. And, you know, in those situations, I usually say, well, first of all, you do understand more than you realize because everybody understands money. You can't be naive about it. We all work with money all day long. But I think it's also important in those situations to give the wife a voice, give them a chance to feel they have a space. The other type of couples I work with are the wife is, like Barb, completely in charge and the husband loves it. Husband's like, look, you know, I trust her. She understands this really, really well. She runs the household. She runs our money. She handles all of this. And so it's an interesting dynamic. So when I work with people, out of the gate, I'm trying to figure out what their persona is.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. I want to kind of touch on that a little bit more because I know when we work with people, what we frequently see, as you're talking about, is there's one person out of the couple that is more or less the money person. Like they're in charge of, you know, the household finances. They're in charge of dealing with this. You know, when I work with a couple, it's usually one person is the point person. And frankly, it's kind of hard to imagine working with two people who are, I don't want to use the word the alpha when it comes to money, but you need somebody who's a point person because, you know, part of the benefit of being coupled is you don't both have to do everything yourselves, right? You're getting to leverage the other person's time and capabilities. So I do agree with you 100%, Megan, that both people need to be involved. Because one of the challenges that comes up is when people get divorced or, you know, widowed, or the person who is the survivor, if they're not knowledgeable about money, it becomes a real problem. So how have you kind of dealt with that, Megan, in your practice and dealing with people who are newly single?
I mean, when they get divorced or they're just the relationship ends?
Yeah.
First of all, I'm actually working with a couple widows right now, and I have, know a number of people who just recently got divorced. Part of the role that I play in those relationships is I have to be strong and steady and in a gentle way, tell them what they need to do. And I say in a gentle way because you can't just boss people around, but people need really strong guidance, what you should be doing, what is the right choice to make. And I find in those relationships, my goal is to make them feel safe. And I say this because right now I'm administering an estate and working with a widow. And before her husband passed, it was really interesting because I did speak to him about 2 weeks before he passed, was he was so focused on making sure she would have enough money and she would be okay. But what I'm focusing with her on right now is creating systems around bill pay and her banking to make sure that nothing gets missed and that we create a repeatable process for her to feel that she's building confidence in running her household. So making people feel safe, making people feel steady is one of the key things I do with people. And a lot of it is just talking about what the concerns are, what the fears are, how do they get to a better place? Because this is overwhelming for most people, whether you're getting divorced or whether you've been widowed or it's just hard stuff to work through. So you want a steady voice.
Barb, what are your thoughts? I mean, I'm sure you've got friends, family, people who are, you know, single or recently single. And how would you advise people kind of handle that hurdle, becoming educated?
This is a situation where, like Megan said, you need to have someone to talk to. So whether it be someone that's really savvy about finances or a financial planner is a really good person to help you see things clearly and to help you navigate through this time. And you don't have to turn all of your assets over to a financial planner, or you can. It's totally up to you. You can hire someone for an hourly fee to help guide you. But when you suffer a big loss or you get divorced or you're widowed, it's a time where you have to take a step back, take some time to evaluate, not make any big financial moves, give yourself some time to grieve the relationship, and then move forward in a sensible way. And it is very, very difficult. So getting help makes sense during this time.
One of the challenges that I've seen certainly with my clients and over the years is when one person is dealing with the finances and then the other one is kind of forced to kind of figure it out quickly. One thing I've seen happen a lot is the people they're working with, you know, they're trying to do what's in their best interest, but the new person doesn't have any experience or kind of baseline. So if somebody's making a recommendation, they're not really knowledgeable enough to say, yeah, this is a good idea or not. And they're pretty much entirely trusting those other professionals to do what's in their best interest, which, you know, as we all know in our industry, not everybody is looking out for people's best interest. So I think that can be a challenge. What can people do to, if they don't have a financial professional, what are some things that they can do, Megan, that they can kind of start down this path to really become more financially savvy?
It's making a choice. It's making a choice to be proactive and engaged in your finances. And that seems sort of obvious, but most people are very passive and let their financial lives happen to them versus taking control over it. And so I think it's a couple of things. I think it's understanding who you are stylistically. Are you the person who wants to work closely with a planner or an advisor to have them help you navigate things and meet with you regularly? Or are you more of a do-it-yourselfer type, right? Are you somebody who wants to go? And she mentioned this in the show. And Barb, I know you said this before the show, or maybe Kirk said that, but there's a lot of data out there. Not that it's good data, but there's a lot of data out there. But, you know, are you a do-it-yourselfer who wants to work that way? But whatever you do, create a system that you can rely on all the time to help with your resiliency. And also to be able to, you want to create a system where you know that the information you get, you're getting is good. So if you decide to work with someone, ask lots of questions. Figure out, are they the one that's right for me? What do their designations mean? What's their style? Style and chemistry is so important in this, in financial planning. And if you go the do-it-yourself route, ask yourself, how am I going to remain accountable? Who's out there? Is there groups that I join, like Bogleheads? Are there web boards? Are there certain people I follow? How will I make myself accountable so that I am engaged with my finances and that I continue to stay engaged with your finances?
Great. Barb, what are your thoughts? You do a lot of financial education. How can people kind of get on that horse quickly?
There are many very, very smart people online, financial advisors, financial professionals with a lot of very stellar information. On the other hand, there are a lot of people that are posing as quote unquote financial coaches or experts and maybe extremely good at marketing and not so great at actually having the right information. And so it is crucial, like Megan and Kirk have said, that you vet whomever you are getting your information from. Look at their designations. Look at their LinkedIn profile. Do they seem legit? Whether it be reading a blog post, because both the good and the bad of the internet now is everyone's an expert. Well, everyone isn't an expert. So you need to vet from wherever your information is coming. You need to vet your advisor, look at their credentials, talk to some other people that have worked with them. And if they don't feel right to you, then you go to someone else. If the information you're reading on a website says, oh yeah, I can guarantee you 12% per year, day in, day out, go to another website. Because if something doesn't feel right, or if it feels or looks too good, you're probably in the wrong place. And I want to bring up another topic, because this is for the ones that, for example, particularly if you lose a spouse or if you lose a partner, the person that had the financial information has to have a central place for everyone else to find it and has to have records and logins and information. So those of you who are the financial managers out there, I encourage you, please take the couple of hours it takes to put everything down in writing and give access to that information to your loved ones in the case that you go and they are left with confusion.
And that's something that we see a lot, and people are doing their estate planning, which of course, nobody wants to do, because no one wants to think about the inevitable. But when people are doing their estate planning, they just think of it from a high level. And what they're not doing is putting together the minutiae, like the excruciating detail of what are the accounts? What are the account numbers? Where are they? You know, you don't need how much money is in there, because, you know, that's going to change over time. But basically, think about it. If somebody were to walk into your life and take over, what information would they need to know? And frankly, this takes a lot of thought, right? Because you don't know. You walk through life, you do this, you do that. You've got these different accounts in different places. And if somebody were to just walk in your life, some people are better at organization than others. And if you're good at organization, it's probably you've already done this. But if you're maybe average or not so good at it, then the person walking into your life is going to be confused, right? Like if you've got an insurance policy that nobody knows about, well, they're not going to be able to collect it because they're not going to be able to put in a claim because they don't know it exists. So for little things, for people in the audience that are older, maybe you might not necessarily qualify for life insurance because of your age, or it'd be prohibitively expensive, would probably be a better way to accurately describe it. You know, some credit cards might have an offer that says, oh, for this amount of month, you can get this amount of life insurance. So even if you don't qualify, they're not necessarily making you take a health exam. So I've seen some people do things like that. But then if you don't know that exists, then no one's going to claim it. So it does make sense to spend the time and to go through the detail and to put together where everything is and review it annually, because your life's going to change. You're going to change banks, you're going to change accounts, you're going to, you know, do all sorts of things, but focus on the big things that people need when they just were to just like step into your shoes. So I think about it that way. Now, Megan, I know you've got some strong thoughts on the financial advice field and people who should and should not be giving advice. So what are your thoughts on that topic?
Barb brought up a lot of it, right? Which is you've got to really make sure you're following someone who's legit. My biggest concern with financial advice is when I think of my training, I have been trained through law school and tax and all of the different trainings I've had in how to work with different types of people to find solutions. And that's important because a lot of times out there, what I'm hearing is that someone is giving financial advice because they paid down debt. And that's a very, very simplistic way to approach it because, as I've pointed out before, not all debt is a bad thing. I mean, I'm very candid about it. I still hold my student loans. Why wouldn't I? Because I can make more in the S&P 500. I think what you have to do is really think about how is the person trained? What is their perspective? Are they giving cookie cutter advice or are they able to adapt and move with their clients to understand who their clients are psychologically to give each specific person their own individualized advice? And just check credentials, check references. When clients want to work with me and they want to talk to my references, great. Happy to introduce you to other clients who can explain what I do. And I will tell you, the funny thing is, my clients explain what I do better than I do, interestingly enough.
You can hire them for your PR, Megan.
I should. But I think First Republic took that idea already.
Yeah. I think it's a great point. And I wanted to kind of carve out one piece of what you said there, which is people who are kind of good at one thing, it doesn't mean they're good at everything. You know, one thing that we see a lot in this industry, and I know, Megan, you probably reiterate this, is, you know, people who are really good at one thing, right? Whatever it might be, they're good at managing a portfolio or they're good at paying down debt or whatever it is. And that doesn't necessarily mean they're good at everything, right? There are a lot of specialists in our industry who are good at one thing, but then people want them to do other things. And it's not necessarily the case. You know, a good example is if people are investing in traditional investments, you know, they might use a Fidelity, a Schwab, a TD, or one of those big retail brokerage firms. That's great. They're really good at stocks, bonds, and mutual funds, and they've systematized it and they've done a lot to be the best, which is why for a lot of those firms, they're charging you 0% for trades because they've become very efficient. Why they do that's a whole nother conversation. But the point being is they're good at that. But if you ask them to go help you buy a horse or real estate, that's not their specialty. That's not what they're good at. You know, other custodians would be really good at that. But it doesn't mean that they're good at, you know, those other custodians may not be as good at buying stocks, bonds, and mutual funds. So I think, you know, you need to really kind of keep in mind the different pieces and are people good at it? And ask the hard questions. Is this something you specialize in? Like, for instance, Megan, you happen to be really well versed in tax and law and different aspects of wealth management. You know, I would just say, look, if somebody had a legal question or a really detailed tax question that's beyond my scope, I'd say, yeah, we have to bring in a specialist because that's not what I do. Having somebody who's candid enough to say, yeah, that's not my expertise, but you know what? I have specialists that do work in that area and, you know, there are people we use frequently and that's okay. You know, you don't have to be an expert at everything. And I'm sure Megan has her specialist too for areas that she's not an expert in. So I think that's a really important component. So anybody who says, oh yeah, I do everything, you might want to get second and third opinions for that. So as we kind of wrap up here, Barb, any kind of final thoughts from you on this topic of couples with money that we hadn't really touched on?
Yeah, be transparent early because if you're in a relationship and you want it to work and it's built for the long term, you shouldn't have money secrets because if you go in with money secrets, they're going to come out later. Other thing is you want to get clear on how to negotiate your money styles. Is one a saver? Is one a spender? And if that's the case, you need to come to a happy medium so that you can both feel comfortable with the other person's style and make sure that you're able to negotiate that before the relationship gets serious. I am Barbara Friedberg. You can find me at Barbara Friedberg Personal Finance, Robo Advisor Pros, or on my Barbara Friedberg YouTube channel. Thanks so much for having me on, and I will see you next time.
Thanks for coming on, Barb. Megan, final thoughts from you.
Barb summarized it really, really well. When we started talking about this today, it reminded me of something my husband always says to me. He's like, you know, if anything ever happens to him, he knows he never has to worry about me in terms of handling the money, knowing how to do stuff. And I think for him, that's a very big peace of mind item. And I find that with a lot of men that I work with, that they will find a moment, you know, when their wife isn't around, where they'll say, I know you'll take care of her for me if something happens to me. And so what I would tell you most people is it's not just about making sure you have a good marriage, that you talk about money in your relationship, but also for the first spouse who passes away, giving them peace of mind that the survivor will be okay. That's part of the reason you do this as well. I'm Megan Gorman. You can find me at thewealthintersection.com. And thanks for having me on, Kirk.
Yep. Thanks for coming on, Megan. Yeah. And that's the show for this week. Thanks again for joining us in Money Tree Investing Podcast. My name is Kirk Chisholm, wealth manager of Innovative Advisory Group. We don't just manage your wealth. We make your life better. You can find more about me at innovativewealth.com. And of course, you can find me every week here on the show. Please remember to subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or Google Play. You can also check out the show at moneytreepodcast.com. On the website, you'll have access to all our resources, show notes, and archive shows. Lastly, please leave a show rating and comment on the podcast app of your choice. Have a great week ahead. And remember, no one will care about your money like you do. So invest in your life.
Thank you for listening to the Money Tree Investing Podcast. Visit us at moneytreepodcast.com for more free investing resources.